Welcome to Learning English from the Voice of America. I'm Katie Weaver. Coming up are reports from Kelly Jean Kelly, Dory Gundy, and me. Later, Alice Bryant brings us Ask a Teacher. And we close the show with an American story. But first, 30-year-old Shamsia Hassani is widely recognized as Afghanistan's first, if not only, female graffiti artist. Being a graffiti artist anywhere in the world presents difficulties. In war-affected Kabul, such artists face special problems. Hassani, however, was recently able to share her work with a broader audience. She was invited to show her work at a street art celebration in the Turkish city of Istanbul. She spent 3 days creating a large painting on a city wall. It shows a usual subject of Hassani's work, a young woman dressed in cool clothes playing an instrument. The woman's eyes are closed and she does not have a mouth. Hassani says those qualities represent the difficulties faced by women in Afghanistan.
She can use music and instrument to talk with people, to speak louder and make more attention, as she has no mouth, but this music and instrument gives her power to speak in society. Her eyes are closed because usually she has nothing good around herself to see, and she doesn't want to see anything around. And sometimes she cannot see her future, but it doesn't mean that she cannot see.
The chance to attend the Istanbul event is welcomed, Hassani says, given the increasingly difficult environment in Afghanistan.
I really scared of public spaces. I really scared from explosions happening all the time. And I feel usually very hopeless because there are a lot of bad things happening around me and I cannot change anything. And specifically, it's difficult for women to do graffiti and street art because usually people are not happy with women's activity.
So, she says, she continues with her street art to help empower people in her country. Hassani was born in Iran to Afghan parents who had fled the war at home. She says she could not study art in Iran because she was Afghan. Her parents moved back to Kabul so Hassani could study art at Kabul University, where she now teaches. My family is very supportive. My parents and my husband, they always support me in my works. All the time I am careful, she says with a nervous laugh. Shamsia Hassani says that in Kabul, she generally has only a few hours to complete her work because of the dangers.
I usually work in Kabul, but usually in a small walls, not in big walls, because I cannot finish them. I need to just run away as soon as I can.
In Istanbul, she had 3 days to complete her painting, a rare treat. It is not only the risk of bombs and hostility toward women artists that Hassani faces. Artistic differences with the owners of the walls upon which she paints also can be a problem. I am trying to get permission, but sometimes it's difficult. Usually the owner of the wall never gives me permission to paint something fantasy like this, Hassani said, pointing to her painting. When asked what keeps her going, Hassani says it is her love of art and the power it has for good. She says she brings art to people in Afghanistan because there are no art museums. She adds, I think that I can change people's minds with my artwork and sharing my ideas with people. That's the thing I really like to do.
Amazon wants to get more young people to consider becoming computer engineers. The American technology company this week launched a program that aims to teach more than 10 million students a year how to code. Amazon says it will pay for summer camps and other costs for young people from low-income families. It also will offer teacher training at low-income schools. The program is called Amazon Future Engineer. Amazon hopes the programs will help bring more African American, Hispanic, and female students to the field of computer science. Other technology companies, including Microsoft and Facebook, also have programs that bring coding to schools. There is a shortage of computer engineers. Teaching more students how to code will help strengthen the industry. Jeff Wilkie is Amazon's head of worldwide consumer. He said he hopes some of the students in the Amazon Future Engineer program will one day work for the company, especially in the development of voice assistant and drone technology. Wilkie said, "We're pretty confident that knowing how to code will be as important as knowing how to read for the jobs of the future." Amazon Future Engineer will provide summer camps and after-school programs for students from kindergarten through eighth grade. The programs will take place in Amazon offices around the country. Volunteer workers will lead the programs. Online classes, lessons, and games will be offered by code.org and coding with kids. Amazon says it also plans to pay for online training in computer science for teachers at 2,000 low-income high schools. In addition, it will offer scholarships and internships for college students. Amazon said some schools have already been testing the program, including Monsignor Scanlon High School in New York City. Jennifer Tulipano, a science teacher at the school, began taking online coding classes in September. Last month, she started teaching two computer science classes on how to create games and how to make animated characters. It is the first time that the school has offered computer science classes. "So much is now online," Tulipano said. "It's a skill set they need moving forward if they want to go into these fields." I'm Dorothy Gundy.
On Tuesday, November 6th, Americans will choose hundreds of federal lawmakers and state officials. The election is called the midterm because it comes in the middle of the president's four-year term. But even though the president is not competing for re-election this year, the results of the midterm will be important to him. They will decide whether his political party, the Republicans, continues to control both parts of Congress. If the Republicans do, Congress will likely help him reach his policy goals. If the opposition Democratic Party wins a majority in Congress, those lawmakers will likely try to block the president's goals. It is also very possible that after November 6th, the Republicans will control one part of Congress and the Democrats another. If that happens, the two groups of lawmakers will probably oppose each other, and few changes will advance. Here are the numbers. Congress has seats for 535 voting members. 100 are in the Senate. The rest are in the House of Representatives. This month, voters will choose 35 senators and all 435 House members. To win a majority in the House, Democrats would need to keep all their seats and gain 24 more. Such a gain would be large, but not impossible. Historically, the opposition party makes some gains in midterms. 8 years ago, Republicans gained more than 60 House seats in the midterm after then-President Barack Obama was elected. That election was seen as a check on Obama's efforts to reform health care in America. This year, a gain half as big by Democrats would give them control of the House. To win a majority in the Senate may be harder for Democrats, although Republicans have only a one-seat advantage now. The reason is because Democrats risk losing some Senate seats they currently control. For example, 10 Democratic senators are running in states that Trump won in 2016. In other words, voters there may now decide they want a lawmaker who is more like the president. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
Have you ever wanted to talk about similarities between people or things, but were unsure what words to use? Today's question comes from Najim of Israel.
Hello from Israel. How can we use alike and like? These two words are very difficult for me.
Hello, Najim, and thanks for asking a teacher. The words alike and like are easy to confuse. We use both to show similarities between people or things. They also sound alike. Did you see how I used the word alike? I used it as an adverb. Alike can be an adverb or an adjective. As an adverb, it means in a similar way. We use it after an action verb, a verb that expresses physical or mental action. Here is an example that is also a popular expression.
Great minds think alike.
It means that very intelligent people have the same ideas at the same time. Here's another.
Teens sometimes try to dress alike.
One other meaning for the adverb alike is both. We use it to talk about two individual people or things, or two groups of people or things.
Students and teachers alike can listen to ask a teacher.
For this meaning, notice that the word alike comes after the two groups, students and teachers. As an adjective, alike means similar in appearance, nature, or form. We use it after linking verbs, such as be, look, and sound. Let's hear some examples.
You and your brother are so much alike.
Those sports cars look alike. They're the same shape and color.
My mom and I sound alike on the phone.
Now, let's talk about like. The main meaning we are talking about today is as a preposition. It means similar to and comes before a noun or pronoun object. Here are some examples.
You are just like your brother.
This sports car looks a lot like that one.
I sound like my mom on the phone.
We can use the preposition like for all five senses. The use of like that often confuses English learners is as a conjunction. When a conjunction, like means as if or as though, and is informal. Here's how that sounds.
The plane felt like it was going to crash.
It means that the plane felt as if it were going to crash. But avoid this use in formal writing. And that's Ask a Teacher. I'm Alice Bryant.
Now, here is Kay Gallant with the American story, A White Heron, by Sarah Orne Jewett.
The forest was full of shadows as a little girl hurried through it one summer evening in June. It was already 8 o'clock, and Sylvie wondered if her grandmother would be angry with her for being so late. Every evening, Sylvie left her grandmother's house at 5:30 to bring their cow home. The old animal spent her days out in the open country eating sweet grass. It was Sylvie's job to bring her home to be milked. When the cow heard Sylvie's voice calling her, she would hide among the bushes. This evening, it had taken Sylvie longer than usual to find her cow. The child hurried the cow through the dark forest, following a narrow path that led to her grandmother's home. The cow stopped at a small stream to drink. As Sylvie waited, she put her bare feet in the cold, fresh water of the stream. She had never before been alone in the forest as late as this. The air was soft and sweet. Sylvie felt as if she were a part of the gray shadows and silver leaves that moved in the evening breeze. She began thinking how it was only a year ago that she came to her grandmother's farm. Before that, she had lived with her mother and father in a dirty, crowded factory town. One day, Sylvie's grandmother had visited them and had chosen Sylvie from all her brothers and sisters to be the one to help her on her farm in Vermont. The cow finished drinking, and as the 9-year-old child hurried through the forest to the home she loved, she thought again about the noisy town where her parents still lived. Suddenly, the air was cut by a sharp whistle not far away. Sylvie knew it wasn't a friendly bird's whistle. It was the determined whistle of a person. She forgot the cow and hid in some bushes. But she was too late. "Hello, little girl," a young man called out cheerfully. "How far is it to the main road?" Sylvie was trembling as she whispered, 2 miles. She came out of the bushes and looked up into the face of a tall young man carrying a gun. The stranger began walking with Sylvie as she followed her cow through the forest. "I've been hunting for birds," he explained, "but I've lost my way. Do you think I can spend the night at your house?" Sylvie didn't answer. She was glad they were almost home. She could see her grandmother standing near the door of the farmhouse. When they reached her, the stranger put down his gun and explained his problem to Sylvie's smiling grandmother. "Of course you can stay with us," she said. "We don't have much, but you're welcome to share what we have. Now, Sylvie, get a plate for the gentleman." After eating, they all sat outside. The young man explained he was a scientist who collected birds. "Do you put them in a cage?" Sylvie asked. "No," he answered slowly. "I shoot them and stuff them with special chemicals to preserve them. I have over 100 different kinds of birds from all over the United States in my study at home." "Sylvie knows a lot about birds, too," her grandmother said proudly. "She knows the forest so well, the wild animals come and eat bread right out of her hands." "So, Sylvie knows all about birds. Maybe she can help me then," the young man said. "I saw a white heron not far from here 2 days ago. I've been looking for it ever since. It's a very rare bird, the little white heron. Have you seen it too?" he asked Sylvie. But Sylvie was silent. "You would know it if you saw it," he added. "It's a tall, strange bird with soft white feathers and long, thin legs. It probably has its nest at the top of a tall tree." Sylvie's heart began to beat fast. She knew that strange white bird. She had seen it on the other side of the forest. The young man was staring at Sylvie. "I would give $10 to the person who showed me where the white heron is." That night, Sylvie's dreams were full of all the wonderful things she and her grandmother could buy for $10. Sylvie spent the next day in the forest with the young man. He told her a lot about the birds they saw. Sylvie would have had a much better time if the young man had left his gun at home. She could not understand why he killed the birds he seemed to like so much. She felt her heart tremble every time he shot an unsuspecting bird as it was singing in the trees. But Sylvie watched the young man with eyes full of admiration. She had never seen anyone so handsome and charming. A strange excitement filled her heart, a new feeling the little girl did not recognize, love. At last evening came. They drove the cow home together. Long after the moon came out and the young man had fallen asleep, Sylvie was still awake. She had a plan that would get the $10 for her grandmother and make the young man happy. When it was almost time for the sun to rise, she quietly left her house and hurried through the forest. She finally reached a huge pine tree so tall it could be seen for many miles around. Her plan was to climb to the top of the pine tree. She could see the whole forest from there. She was sure she would be able to see where the white heron had hidden its nest. Sylvie's bare feet and tiny fingers grabbed the tree's rough trunk. Sharp, dry branches scratched at her like cat's claws. The pine tree's sticky sap made her fingers feel stiff and clumsy as she climbed higher and higher. The pine tree seemed to grow taller the higher that Sylvie climbed. The sky began to brighten in the east. Sylvie's face was like a pale star when at last she reached the tree's highest branch. The golden sun's rays hit the green forest. Two hawks flew together in slow-moving circles far below Sylvie. Sylvie felt as if she could go flying among the clouds, too. To the west, she could see other farms and forests. Suddenly, Sylvie's dark gray eyes caught a flash of white that grew larger and larger. A bird with broad white wings and a long, slender neck flew past Sylvie and landed on a pine branch below her. The white heron smoothed its feathers and called to its mate, sitting on their nest in a nearby tree. Then it lifted its wings and flew away. Sylvie gave a long sigh. She knew the wild bird's secret now. Slowly, she began her dangerous trip down the ancient pine tree. She did not dare to look down and tried to forget that her fingers hurt and her feet were bleeding. All she wanted to think about was what the stranger would say to her when she told him where to find the heron's nest. As Sylvie climbed slowly down the pine tree, the stranger was waking up back at the farm. He was smiling because he was sure from the way the shy little girl had looked at him that she had seen the white heron. About an hour later, Sylvie appeared. Both her grandmother and the young man stood up as she came into the kitchen. The splendid moment to speak about her secret had come. But Sylvie was silent. Her grandmother was angry with her. Where had she been? The young man's kind eyes looked deeply into Sylvie's own dark gray ones. He could give Sylvie and her grandmother $10. He had promised to do this, and they needed the money. Besides, Sylvie wanted to make him happy. But Sylvie was silent. She remembered how the white heron came flying through the golden air and how they watched the sun rise together from the top of the world. Sylvie could not speak. She could not tell the heron's secret and give its life away. The young man went away disappointed later that day. Sylvie was sad. She wanted to be his friend. He never returned. But many nights, Sylvie heard the sound of his whistle as she came home with her grandmother's cow. Were the birds better friends than their hunter might have been? Who can know?
That's our show for today. For VOA Learning English, I'm Katie Weaver.